call it wacky dust. It's from a hot cornet. It gives your feet a feeling so breezy, and oh, it's so easy to get. They call it wacky dust. It brings a dancing jazz. And when it starts, then only a sap will refuse to Big Apple or Shag. Though I don't know just why it gets you so high, putting a buzz in your heart. You'll do a marathon, you'll wanna go on, kicking the ceiling apart. They call it wacky dust. It's something you can't trust. And in the end, the rhythm will stop. When it does, then you'll drop from happy wacky dust.
I got a hold of Commissioner.
Hey, we are ready to go, and I'd like to welcome everyone to the Parks and Recreation Commission meeting on Wednesday, April the 6th. 2022. We are very excited to have you all join us, and welcome. So I'm going to call the meeting to order and ask everyone to please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance and join me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, thank you all so much. And now we are going to move to roll call, which will be done by our management assistant, Ms. Ramirez.
Commissioner Holdren?
I'm here.
Commissioner Jenkins, I believe, is here. Let me just move him over as the panelist. Okay, and then Commissioner Rapolgo-Purinton?
Present.
Commissioner Walton?
Present.
Vice Chair Williams?
Here.
And Chair West?
Here.
And Commissioner Dent will not be in attendance today.
Thank you so much.
Ms. Ramirez, so now- can you please, can we ask Commissioner Jenkins to state that he is here?
Commissioner Jenkins, if you can please unmute yourself from your phone.
Okay, well, maybe we will get him.
Hello.
There he is.
Hello.
Yeah, we can hear you just fine.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so now we are going to move on to the public forum. So at this time, we are going to ask if there's any member of the public who would like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda. So Ms. Ramirez, do we have anybody waiting to speak?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to an item that is not on the agenda, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Okay, thank you. So now we're going to move to A, the consent calendar. And I want to let everybody know that I'm going to need to read all of this into the record. So it's going to take a little while, but here we go. So A1, I'm so sorry, I am trying to avoid the sun and I'm having technical difficulties. Please excuse me. So A1 is the approval of the November 18th, 2021 and March 17th, 2022 Parks and Recreation Commission special meeting minutes and the February 2nd, 2022 Parks and Recreation Commission meeting minutes. So the recommendation is that we approve the November. I'm sorry? Commissioner Holdren? Jenkins, did you have something you'd like to share? Okay, I'm going to continue with the recommendation. To approve the November 18th, 2021 and March 17th, 2022 Parks and Recreation Commission special meeting minutes and the February 2nd, 2022 Parks and Recreation Commission meeting minutes. So that's getting that into the consent calendar for the record, and the staff is Joanne Plummer, Parks and Recreation Manager. Then we're going to move to A2, Parks and Open Space Division report. And the recommendation was to receive and file a report regarding recent activities and initiatives in the Parks and Open Space Division. The staff was George Thompson, our Parks and Open Space Manager. And finally, on A3 was the director's report. And the recommendation was to receive the director's report on current events and projects supported by the Neighborhood Services Department. And the staff was Jaime Valdez, Neighborhood Services Director. So what I need to do at this point is Mrs. Plummer wanted to speak before we move into the motion procedure. So Mrs. Plummer, would you like to talk now?
Yes, thank you, Chair West. Members of the commission, we've received a request to take another look at the minutes from the November 17th special meeting. And we would like to propose an amendment to those minutes. And if you support that, when you approve the minutes, you would be approving them as amended. The amendment would be to add the amended motion on the item that we had. If you recall, we had a motion and then there was an amended motion. That motion had no vote taken, so we'd like to reflect that. The motion was restated, voted upon, it passed. There was another request for an amended motion and that motion again was not voted upon, so we'd like to list no vote taken. And so for that clarification for that agenda item. So if there's no questions or concerns about that, then those minutes would be approved as amended if you are approving them. And so I just wanted to make that note.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate the clarification. So before we move into a motion, we need to ask Ms. Ramirez if there are any members of the public who would like to speak at this time before we proceed.
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to these items, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Okay, great. So do we have any motions on the floor? Oh, thank you, our vice. Would you like to go ahead? You're muted. You're muted. Vice Chair, you're muted.
There we go. I would be happy to make the motion. However, I would like to pull two items from the consent agenda at this time for further discussion.
Okay, so you want to table them? No, we're not tabling.
My recollection is the first inquiry is whether any commissioners wanted to pull any items.
Okay.
And I would like to pull two items for discussion.
Okay.
And then after discussion, I'll be very happy to move to approve.
Okay. So with that in mind, we are going to then open it up for discussion at this time.
So I would move to pull items 8.1 and 8.2 for further discussion.
All righty.
From the consent agenda.
From the consent agenda. And I am going to officially request guidance from Mrs. Plummer on how to correctly proceed. Please.
No problem, Chair West. So Vice Chair Williams has requested to pull two items. So we'll take those one item at a time. And so if we want to go ahead and talk about item A1 and see if there are any changes or what the discussion is. And then after that, if there's no further discussion, then we can move on to the item A2.
Sounds good. Okay. So Vice Chair Williams, would you like to begin the discussion for us, please, on A1?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to thank staff for correcting the previous amendments. That's great. So that's greatly appreciated. I did talk with staff about this, but I also wanted to raise it to the full commission. I'm sure that other commissioners, when you read the motion for our February 2nd meeting on the Heritage Ridge issue, the motion was quite awkward and it was a little unclear, I think, from the motion that exactly what the commission recommendation was. And so I would like to propose the smallest tweak to the motion as it is written to, I think, clearly reflect for the Planning Commission's purposes and the City Council's purposes, which is the whole point of our reviewing that, is to make a recommendation to the Planning Commission and the City Council. And the small tweak was Vice Chair Williams / Commissioner Walton to recommend to the Planning Commission and City Council that the amenities proposed at the Heritage Ridge Residential Project Proposed Park are not consistent with the city's park needs as specified in the Parks, Facilities, and Playgrounds Master Plan and the Recreation Needs Assessment, which is exactly what we discussed and voted on. And of course, it was a close vote, but the motion really, I think, is more accurately reflected with those tiny little tweaks. But again, the way it's written now, it's quite confusing, sort of a double negative, or, you know, it just sort of winds around on itself. And so I'm still a little confused why we can't clarify the motion, if we all agree that, yes, that indeed was the motion that we discussed, because I do think that's much, much clearer for the Planning Commission, and they're actively reviewing this right now, and then for the City Council. So that is what I wanted to discuss. The rest of the minutes from the other two meetings are fine.
But so really Vice Chair Williams and members of the commission, I wanted to share that as we were preparing the minutes, we did look at that because while we agree with Vice Chair Williams, it does come across a little bit not as clear as we believe that the commission intended the motion to be. But what we did when we were doing our due diligence is went back to the video and we reviewed the video, and Brittany prepared the minutes verbatim to the video. And so we did check with our legal counsel to see if there is a way to make some minor modifications to clarify the discussion or the recommendation based on the discussion that happened at that meeting. And we have been advised that we cannot make those changes to the minutes at this time. So if you're not comfortable voting on them as is, we could table those particular minutes from the agenda. But the advice that I received today after speaking with our legal office was that we have to stick with how the agenda was read into the, or how the motion was read into the record. And that's how it was read into the record, and that's what we have portrayed for you today. So I understand the request. Unfortunately, we're unable to make that request. We went with what was read into the record.
Yes, Vice Chair, would you like to, I see your hand.
Right, thank you. Part of the reason I did this was, you know, I will defer to what Joanne said, but I thought it was important for the commission to hear that exchange. And perhaps in the future, we can all make sure when we make a motion to have Ms. Ramirez read it back, so that if it's important at the time to have an even clearer motion that makes more sense, because sometimes it's hard in the press of meeting to get, you know, the clearest motion possible so that we can correct it at the time. Again, our job is to give Planning Commission in this case, and especially always the City Council and staff, our guidance. And the goal is to be as clear in that guidance as possible. So I would really still love to modify the motion if that's simply to reflect more accurately what we said. But if that's not possible, at least perhaps we can all learn from this how important it is to, you know, have the clearest possible motion so we can give the best guidance. All right. With that, I'm ready to move on to A2.
All right. Take it. I'm
not ready to do that.
Okay. No, we would love to hear from you, Commissioner Jenkins.
Well, if we table that item, what happens to it in terms of bringing it back up and agendizing it to be discussed for further clarification? Does that happen at our next meeting, or are we?
Commissioner Jenkins, Commissioner Jenkins, members of the commission, in response to that request specifically, the end result would still be the same. As staff, I would go to our legal office and our city clerk's office, and they've advised me that it is it goes against our process and our policy to reword something that is actually recorded in video. We don't do that. So it is worded as it is stated in the video from that meeting. So tabling it would allow us more opportunity to talk about it, but the end result would be the same, that we cannot alter a motion after it's the meeting, it's been voted on and approved, and we keep going unless we were to change it that meeting, as my understanding. I am happy to go back and chat again, but that is my understanding, is there wouldn't be no difference in the end result. But to Vice Chair Williams' point, moving forward, looking at a lesson learned to make sure that we are really cautious with the words that we choose. And staff does the same in our recommendations, trying to give you the language that if you're stuck on words, that way you could just read the recommendation, and if that's how you're choosing to vote, to make it easier for commissioners. So I think that I don't think that a result would change.
Thank you. I'm agreeing wholeheartedly with what Mrs. Plummer just said and what our vice chair said. We all remember that evening, and I think we've all learned to be a little bit shrewder and more careful when we proceed with the motion. So what I'd like to do is, if there's not any more discussion on A1, I'd like to then move to, because Vice Chair also wanted to discuss A2. Let's talk about Parks and Open Space Division report. And Vice Chair, what did you want to bring to our attention about that?
Yes, thank you so much. First of all, I think we can all express our enthusiasm that Mr. Thompson has wonderful sounding new staff in Jocelyn Fritz, and I understand we'll meet her in a couple months, but hooray, a UCSB distinguished grad is joining the ranks, and so that's very exciting. I do have a couple questions with respect to the request for proposals, landscape maintenance at city parks, if that's all right, Mr. Thompson. And there are three, and I'll just list them all for you. If you need me to go back, I'm happy to do that too. How long would the contract be for? How many years? Two, approximately how much money are we talking about, either per year or for the total contract? And three, do you anticipate before going to the city council with your recommendation, coming back to the commission to get our feedback before it goes to the city council?
Great. Good evening, Chair, Vice Chair Williams and commissioners. Thank you for your questions. So just for everybody's reference, so we all know what we're talking about. Our division, the Parks and Open Space Division, is going to be releasing a request for proposal to perform landscape maintenance work in all of our parks. So that includes turf mowing, cleaning of picnic areas, trash removal, trimming, weeding, all of the things that need to happen on a daily basis to keep our parks clean, safe, and beautiful. So we've had a landscape contractor. Just for reference, most of our services are contracted out, these large contracts. We don't perform a lot of these services in-house because we don't have the staff numbers to perform daily maintenance across several hundred acres. So we look to third-party contractors, private contractors, to perform that work. So the current contract has been in place since 2017. So that's coming on 5 years. We anticipate that the new contract will be roughly the same length. So specifically, we'll have a 3-year base contract with 2 1-year options to renew the contract. If the contractor performs well, we see the competitive bid environment in 3 years from now being such that we want to retain the services of that contractor, then mutually we can agree to extend that contract with city council's approval. So it'd be ultimately a 5-year agreement. In terms of dollar amounts, the current contractor paid $109,400 a year to perform all of the park's maintenance duties in their contract scope of work. So those are 2017 prices. Luckily, we still are able to take advantage of those. But what we can anticipate going forward with this new contract is, one, the competitive bid environment that we're in right now is cutthroat, meaning that for public agencies such as ourselves, we are anticipating that we are not going to get very competitive bids. People are busy. Contractors have more work than they have time for. And when we're in this sort of environment, prices that we receive from third-party contractors are elevated because they'll throw a number at it. And if it sticks, they make more money. And by the number that they throw out, that means that they're throwing out kind of, if we get this contract, great. If we don't, we've got tons of other work to do. So that's just the nature of the environment that we're in. We're in a booming economy. And certainly there's economic indicators that are forecasting a downturn or a slowing of the economy. But right now we need to get a contractor on board, mowing our turf, cleaning up our parks on July 1, 2022. So we can't wait to do this process. So in short, that means that, the $109,400 that we're paying now, one, that price is low. We got a great deal, but we are making some tweaks to the contract scope of work so that there is more power on the city's side to not pay the contractor if they're not performing. So this is a critical part of any contract, and we're paying attention to that, where if we're not satisfied with the work, they're not meeting the expectation is clearly spelled out in our contract specifications. If they're not doing specific parts of the work, we're not paying them. When you have a contract like that, it makes contractors a little more on edge because they know they actually have to perform. There's going to be inspections. And so that results in a higher bid price. We think it's good value because they're hired by the city to keep our parks safe, clean, and beautiful. And it's been 5 years since we received that initial bid price. We know through price escalation, cost of living increases, that we're now, you know, paying nearly $7 a gallon for gas. They're running mowers. They're doing all of that work. All of those things factor in the bid price. So we're expecting likely a 50% cost increase. And we budgeted that in our annual budget. And so we're going to be broadcasting far and wide for as many contractors as possible to bid on this. But remember, we're in the Santa Barbara Goleta area, and we're isolated from the large contractors that come out of Los Angeles that are up in the Bay Area. We don't have access to those contractors. A contractor has to drive daily from wherever their headquarters is to our parks. So we're looking at a limited geographic area. Vice Chair Williams, to answer your last question, we are not planning to bring this back to the commission, and I can provide a little bit of explanation why. The scope of work is, I wouldn't say highly technical, but it's fairly standard for a parks maintenance scope of work. And so we didn't feel like, you know, from the staff level, that there are a lot of things that the commissioners could really sink their teeth into and weigh in on. I mean, we're talking about things like our turf mowing height, how frequently the garbage is removed, what types of weeds need to be pulled out of the landscape. And so these are, you know, things that I was hired really to provide that professional service to the city in my role. And so for this particular proposal, we're not anticipating that the commission will be weighing in on the details of the proposal. But what we would like to do with the commission is to have an item in the future, this year, this calendar year, to do a deep dive into the daily operations of our parks. That includes going through some of the specifications of our scope of work, really pull back the curtain and provide the community at large and the commission in particular with a behind the scenes look at what our daily operations are, who does what, which contractors we have on board, and we can get into a little bit more detail of what's included in the scope of work at that time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. So, Vice Chair, we're only on A. We got a long evening in front of us. So my goal is to help us kind of reach a decision on, after we're done talking, to move this forward. So
I'll be brief with the only other question, one comment and one question. And the comment, Mr. Thompson, is just, I hope in the specifications, there are provisions that make it as have the smallest carbon footprint possible, because again, that's such a huge goal of our city and the city council. So utilizing electric leaf blowers, electric mowers, everything to the extent that we can, and this is just one part of the city strategy to reduce our carbon footprint and be carbon neutral by the time the city council wants us to be carbon neutral. So I hope that's incorporated. Last quick question, you can be quick about this, comment and then question. I hope in all future reports that if you aren't talking about Lake Los Canaris or Elwood, that you will update us on that. And in this case, there's no update on Lake Los Canaris, particularly with the master plan. Now, you and I have been in communication. I understand that you'll be bringing the master plan status to us in June, but I would just ask it in the future, because we're at a critical time for both of those open spaces. And our job as a commission is to give guidance to staff and the city council and be a liaison with the public on our open spaces in our city. And that there always be something on both, either in your presentation or your report. But anything else besides saying you'll be coming to us in June on the Lake Los Canarios Master Plan, you'd like to highlight?
Not specific to Lake Los Canarios, but you're absolutely correct, Vice Chair Williams. We will have a full presentation item for Lake Los Canarios with an update on the master plan status. Related to that, we're not going to be at City Council prior to that June meeting with the Park and Rec Commission. So just want to give you some confidence that City Council is not going to be making a big decision on that project prior to your input.
Thank you. And with that, Chairman, I would be very happy to move to approve the consent agenda.
Lovely. Would you like to make a motion?
I just did.
Vice Chair Williams, can I ask that in the minutes that you reflect as amended in for the first minutes from November 17th?
As amended for the first minutes.
Okay. So do we need to have that totally reiterated for the record? Are we okay with that?
No, I think
Plummer, is that okay?
We're okay, thank you. Yes.
Okay, so do we have a second?
Second.
Who said that?
Richard Jenkins.
Oh, I'm sorry, we cannot see you, so thank you. Okay, so how about a roll call vote, Ms. Ramirez?
Commissioner Holdren? Commissioner Holdren, I think you're on mute. We're on mute.
How about now?
Yay.
Sorry. Aye.
Commissioner Jenkins?
Aye.
Commissioner Rapolgo-Purrington?
Aye.
Commissioner Walton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Williams?
Yes.
And Chair West?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Vice Chair, for working so hard to get that all worked out for us. So we appreciate that. Okay, so we are going to move on to B, and B1 is the Parks and Recreation Project Updates. And we are going to hand that over to Joanne Plummer, our Parks and Recreation Manager.
Thank you, Chair West and members of the commission. Tonight, I'm excited. I pulled the Parks and Recreation Manager updates out of consent item because there is so much to share with you. So if Brittany was gonna bring that presentation up. Thank you, Ms. Brittany. And next slide, please. Next slide. So our next slide will just tell us that we're going through, and you have all of this information in your packet if she's having some technical difficulties. Our first slide talks about what our project updates are going to be. So Brittany, as soon as you can, go ahead and pull the presentation up. That'd be great. But our agenda for these tonight is staff introductions, the playground project with the miscellaneous programs, park project improvements, the community garden multi-purpose trail at Armitos Park, and the splash pad at Johnny D. Wallace Neighborhood Park, the Matilda Park Drainage Project, as well as the Stowe Grove Park Master Plan for Design. Not taking a deep dive into these, just kind of scratching the surface to bring you up to date. We talked a little bit about all of these last meeting we had when we talked about the budget. So we're going to go ahead to the next slide, in which I am very excited to bring to you Leonel Mendoza Vera. He is our Parks and Recreation Management Assistant. Leo's been with us. You can call him Leonel or Leo. We were able to add him to our crew in January to the Neighborhood Services team. He works about 20 hours a week to support Parks and Recreation projects and programs. He's currently developing and redesigning some of our web pages to enable us to better serve our customer inquiries related to the Adopt a Park program and the Butterfly Grove specifically. His primary area of responsibility will be our education programs with the butterfly education as well as the garden education as that project is coming online, and our volunteer coordination as it relates to our Adopt a Park program as well as our docent program when we're able to bring that back. He also wears the hat of our pickleball guru as he trains everybody how to set up the pickleball nets at Evergreen Park, and he gets them to sign all their paperwork and make sure all that is in order. And he does anything else that Joanne throws his way. And he is a fantastic juggler because he's been holding all these balls up in the air at once. He's currently assisting with some of our projects in the behind the scenes, learning more than he ever wanted to know about parks and recreation, including babysitting a construction project over a weekend when we know kids wanted to be playing on it. He's been working on our July's Parks and Recreation month calendar, which we'll review with you in June. And we've been keeping him so busy that I just cannot remember a time without Lionel, and it's only April. And we're just so happy to have him on our team. I believe Lionel is on with us. Lionel, if you want to pull your camera up and wave. Did you want to say a few words? Sorry, I catch you off guard. Didn't even tell you that. Do you want to say anything, Lionel?
Hi, everyone. I hope everyone's doing well. I'm very excited. Thank you, Joanne, for that wonderful introduction. She basically took everything that I had to say, but I'm very excited to be here, and I look forward to working with everyone here as well.
Thank you, Lionel. Okay, next slide. We're going into our miscellaneous park improvements, which was the CIP 9066 and 9108. This project is nearly complete. It's so close to being done that I can taste it. Next slide, please, Brittany. We're going to start off at Berkeley Park. So as you may recall, the slides don't do justice, as we can't really do before and after pictures, but we are working on a photo that will show some before and after. But where we have the butterfly, we used to just have one little bouncy item, as the other ones had been removed over the years. There's also a seesaw at that location that was non-compliant. So the butterfly, and then we have a spring bouncer in the back. Those are for the ages of 2 to 5 years old. The butterfly has been very well received. She does have a little boo-boo on her. We're working with the vendor to come out and repair her, but she is getting lots of use. In the other area, this is the 5 to 12 year old play structure. We do have, this area was empty before because we had to take out swings that were non-compliant. And this is a lot of fun. In the area, this 5 to 12 year old area is getting a lot of use by children, as well as I've seen adults working out on the playground surfacing material rather than the grass or the concrete. So they're using that soft surface to work out. I would like to take this opportunity as well to remind the public that we've seen, since the new playgrounds have gone in, a lot of people using them as their palette for sidewalk chalk. And we ask that you not let your children use sidewalk chalk on the surfacing. It's not good for the surfacing materials. So please use the sidewalk chalk on the sidewalk and keep it off of the material. I wanted to make the commission aware that there is an area in the surfacing for the 5 to 12 structure where the surfacing was installed a little too high. So we had some wear marks, premature wear marks occurring as kids were using that piece of equipment. So the vendor came out and they just put in a patch, and I'm not satisfied with the patch, nor am I satisfied with how this is holding up in such a short amount of time. So I had the vendor out last week looking at the system, and he's in agreement. So we're looking to see what we can do. So you may hear that we have to shut this playground down, and it would be to address the patch area material and make that patch better and something that I feel comfortable accepting, as well as we may look at having to put a coating on top of the surfacing material to deal with the fading that's existing at a faster rate than is normal. So trying to figure out what's going on there. So we'll keep you posted on that. Next slide, please. So Winchester One Park, this is on Cayo Real on the west side of town. And this is on the very top of this hill. This park area is at a slant. So we used to have a swing set at the very top of this hill. And in order to make it ADA accessible, we had to move the features closer to the right of way. And so in doing so, because we have a large playground further down in this same neighborhood, the decision was to have fitness equipment at this location. And this is how it turned out. It looks amazing. The Public Works Division came in and added the split rail fence, which really ties the whole thing together. And it looks so beautiful. This area has been recognized as a national demonstration site because it meets all the elements of fitness in just these four pieces of equipment. So we have a new sidewalk that leads up to the area. We still were able to keep the entire grass area open. We do know we have a lot of users who used to visit this area from behind the park. There's a trailer park in that, in the depths of behind the park. And so we are looking to see and evaluating the site if there's anything else that can be added. But at this time, this park location is complete. So Public Works is coming back in and doing some landscape adjustments and some irrigation adjustments to this location. So the renovation component has been completed, but we are still working on some functional and aesthetic improvements with the help of Public Works. Next slide, please. Winchester 2 Park. This park has been completed as well. We have also completed the irrigation improvements, and we are still working on some other components of this park. While this playground is open for families to enjoy, we've already experienced vandalism at this location. Two of the play pieces, the play apparatuses that were attached to the structures, have been pried off and stolen. New parts have already been ordered and are expected any day. In addition, the commission may recall that we were to install a curb as part of this project on the south end of the property. This part of the project was pulled during construction due to some challenges related to some mature tree roots. Staff is currently working with an engineering firm, an arborist, and the Public Works Division on a design that will be beneficial for the park and safe for the mature trees on the southwest portion of the park. And as soon as that design has been finalized, staff will share it with the two neighbors that are, have been impacted by the storm water runoff that runs right into their yards during heavy rain events at this park location. So those neighbors are the ones on Warwick Place, and there's two, and during heavy events like we experienced in December, they in some areas just get inundated with some water. So we were actually out at the park today, and we think we have a solution. So that's getting written up, and as soon as we can get that through our approval process, then we'll be taking it to those neighbors. And again, we're actually looking at possibly adding a sidewalk from Warwick to the playground on one side that will have a curb to help guide water the right direction, and on the other side, installing the curb, but actually having to pull it further into the park, which would also allow our Parks Maintenance Division a delineation between where all the majority of our trees are and then where our turf area is, so that there's no trippable hazards with roots that are coming up through the grass either, and that the trees can be properly cared for. Next slide, please. Andamar Park. So this is an exciting park. This one is just about complete. What we have, you've seen these pictures because this came out to you last week. There's still a fence around the park. On Monday, we were able to take that fence down and open the playground to the kids. The park did have an inspection last week, and it did pass its inspection. So the contractor was able to come in and clean it up and correct some scratches and a couple things and open up the playground. This park is not quite complete, as there is a ramp, an ADA ramp from the cul-de-sac that needs to be re-poured. We're doing the forms this week and hopefully pouring concrete next week, as well as a sidewalk from that ADA ramp to the playground. These swings, as you can see in your bottom left-hand corner, these are a little bit different than your average swings. These are called tween mates. There's where two friends can swing together and face one another, as well as on the other side, you see a toddler swing with an adult where a parent and a child can face one another as well. So different swings, trying to look at different features. We have our old school merry-go-round, and it's not as fast as it was when we were all kids, but it is still a lot of fun. And then the structure to the left is the 5-12 structure, and it is it's a challenging structure for kids. It does challenge them physically. So kind of exciting to have that creative play and that, and them working the agility to get to the top and to do some of these things. So it is a lot of fun. We actually, I was there when our inspector climbed to the top and slid down the slide, and he actually said, "We," going down the slide. Winchester 2 Park, as well as this park at Andamar, feature playgrounds that meet all six elements of play. Those elements are swinging, spinning, climbing, balance, brachiating, and sliding, which designates them as national demonstration sites for Play On for meeting the best practices in design and program elements while promoting physical activity. So there are only a few national demonstration sites in California, and Goleta with this project has just had three parks recognized as national demonstration sites. So almost done, and we'll get ribbon cutting information to the commission as soon as possible. We're looking at having the ribbon cutting ceremony at one park and then photos with ribbon cuttings at the other parks, but just one ceremony. And we'll keep you posted as to when that's gonna happen. Next slide, please. The community garden and multipurpose path at Armitos Park. Next slide. This is the final design that we've used the input from commission and council for the final design of Armitos Park. The existing playground, because of the cost and that we didn't get the ground, is specified to remain, but we will be adding an alternate bid item for a new playground in case the numbers come in and we can afford to put in a brand new playground as well. We're also adding swings to this location. And we don't need to go into detail because the commission has already heard this, but I wanted to share that this was the final design. This project is 95% complete, and we're providing that final feedback to the designer. The project will be bid to include refreshing that existing playground that I just talked about, having that bid alternate for the 5 to 12 year old structures. There is no intention to have a 2 to 5 year old structure here, as we do have the sand play pits, the two different tables for sand play, and the musical instruments for that age group at this location. It's our intent to bid this project with the splash pad project, so the neighbors in the area are only impacted once. Next slide, please. The splash pad and the other improvements at Johnny D. Wallace Neighborhood Park. Next slide. And this park as well is 95% construction documents. We're providing final feedback. We are talking with the Goleta Water District, Goleta Sanitary District, and the County Environmental Health to get their buy-off and approvals before we take this project to council for permission to bid. And so as you recall, the commission voted to have underground water features. So on the right, that's basically what it would kind of look like. On the left, you'll see the light blue with some squiggly lines and polka dots right about the middle of the screen. That's the location of the splash pad. So very exciting. Little improvements on the top. You'll see we talked about adding shade structures to those picnic areas to make them more usable. And there's some wonky configurations on at least one of them because we can't have that cover the barbecue pit, and all of that stuff is in concrete. So we have shade on most of those tables for most of the day. We are adding some additional fencing at the basketball court and at the pickleball courts. And we are adding there is an actual building and a structure between the bocce court and the pickleball court area. And that is our mechanical room for all the mechanics related to the splash pad. That will also have an exterior shower that will only be able to be turned on when the splash pad is in use during those allowable hours to prevent anybody from showering in that area during non-splash pad opportunities. Next slide, please. Matilda Park. So let's talk a little bit about this one. Matilda Park is one that we have a drainage issue. During a storm event, we have water pools at this park, and the surfacing has been severely damaged. We looked at just replacing the surfacing, but we have to solve the problem, and that's adding some drain opportunities that will drain right to our storm drains, which we're doing. And because we're doing that, we have to realign the ADA walkway. So we had to pull out a lot of the original walkway to meet the ADA grade guidelines. We're not making any changes to the backside of the park, unless the concrete has to be manipulated for ADA. We are altering some of the landscaping only in this area to reduce maintenance. So we're going to be putting in some drought tolerant plant material, as well as natural materials that don't need to be mowed and maintained as often. And then to the right of the circle where the playground is, you see a little ear. And that little ear to the right is an area of grass that currently exists. And so the grass is, we're just trying to define it a little bit better for maintenance purposes, as well as for the planting of some of those natural plants. So we're not, we weren't looking at a park redesign at this location. We're looking at just addressing that surfacing material. And in doing so, we had to impact so much of the access area up there that we took the opportunity to increase maintenance standards, as well as utility standards, moving the utility lines and improving the irrigation. The playground right now, that one is specified to try to restore, but because the water's been pooling in the surfacing material, we don't know what the foundation poles look like. So we are specifying a bid alternate on that one as well for a new playground, and we'll be bringing those playground designs. This one is just an example of one, but we'll be bringing two different designs to the commission. We're limited with the amount of space at this location, because this again is up a high hill. We'll be bringing the playground designs so that we can include that into the bid alternate. That will be coming to the commission in June. This is one of them, but we've asked the vendor for a secondary one so the commission can make those choices. Next slide. Stowe Grove Park Master Plan. I'm happy to report that the steering committee met on March 31st. As commission recalls, Commissioner Jenkins was part of that meeting. We have a couple members of the community on our steering committee, to include Jessie Allstadt. She's the current chair for the Public Tree Advisory Commission. She also is a member of the Audubon Society. She also dabbles in a couple other areas of art interest and some other areas, and she is a biologist. So she's a fantastic asset to that committee. We also have a member of the Stowe family on the committee as well. So along with the staff and the consultant. Our stakeholder meetings are scheduled for April 7th and April 14th. And on April 7th, we're meeting with those involved in active recreation. And on April 14th, we're meeting those individuals associated in passive recreation. This will be a discussion. These members were identified with the help of the steering committee. And then our public meeting, we have a tentative date, but we cannot market this until we receive confirmation. It looks like we will be having that public meeting on April 23rd. As soon as we have that confirmed, I will share that with the commission. It would take place in the morning from 10 to 12, and we're hoping to be at La Patera School. And we'll know as soon as we get confirmation, we'll share that with the commission, and you'll see advertisements going out on that too. But that's our tentative date, and that's the date we're hoping to make that happen. Following the meetings and during the public meeting, there would be a discussion of surveys. And so you'll be seeing survey material coming out after the public meeting, and we'll keep that information open for a while. And those survey questions will be building upon the survey that we conducted earlier, as well as information that comes out of the stakeholder meetings, so, and the public meetings. So just so you know, it's not just another survey, it's a survey that is a building block on everything we have already. So we're really excited. I will share that the group, our consultant, they've already done some site visits, some preliminary information. They've done all the historical documents, reviewed everything, and they have done a current tree survey in the park, and we're just real excited. We're real happy with everything that's happened so far and moving forward. We do have a logo. Finally, we didn't have it at the time of promotion, but I will share that with you as well when we send out the information on the public meeting, which we're hoping to have by Monday at the very latest. And the next slide. And that's all I have for you right now. Like I said, we've been really busy, and Leonel's been working on a lot of our program side. This is just the project side. So if you have any questions, I am happy to answer any questions you might have.
Oh, thank you so much, Mrs. Plummer. That was an outstanding, where did you go? There you are. Outstanding presentation. You are just a gift to all of us and to the city of Goleta. I've always told you, I've always felt you're like three people doing everything, but in one person. So let me tell everybody what is happening here. So we don't need a motion. We're not voting, but we are right now opening it up for questions. And Joanne, I just had two real quick ones. Also, I wanted to congratulate you and the city for having three of our parks now able to receive the well-deserved national recognition. That's huge. You get credit for taking the city to do that, so congratulations. So the first one was just real briefly, if you could go into a little more detail about our butterfly, our beloved city butterfly at Berkeley Park, because that butterfly is so new, it concerns me that it already has a little boo-boo, which you, so that was my one question. And the second one is, in life, the older you get, you learn that sometimes if one thing happens, it gets repeated no matter what you do. So at Winchester too, when there has already immediately been the theft of new equipment, is there any way we could have any type of high in the tree security lights, a sensor movement that if two kids would climb up and think it's cute to steal the swings, that a bright light would show up and on them?
Chair West, thank you for your comments and members of the commission. First and foremost, regarding the National Demonstration Site, the kudos actually goes to the commission. Actually had members help pick out the vendor that designed those sites. So it's a shared recognition, but thank you for that. And thank you for your kind words. Regarding the theft, vandalism and theft is not something that's uncommon in some of our parks. We were disappointed that it happened right away. We did notice that we had a lot of users that were not from that neighborhood because it was new and they heard about it. So we did put out an alert, not only to our law enforcement, but we also put out an alert to a lot of neighbors. I have a list of, I think, about 25 or 30 neighbors, let them know what happened, and they are keeping their eyes and ears out. George just heard from a neighbor today saying that they heard people in the park late at night. So that is a concern of ours. If a bright light comes on, unless there's someone there to see it or do something about it, it's not really a big deterrent. Unfortunately, if someone's going to choose to do wrong, they're just going to choose to do it faster and get out of there faster. So this is a topic that we are talking about as a city level with all of our facilities, not just our parks, but how can we keep an eye on our parks after hours? And so that's something that we're working through right now. So your point is a very valid point, and I agree with you. It's not an isolated incident. It's very unfortunate that it happened so quickly, and the parents are taking the parents have communicated to me that they will report either to myself, to Mr. Thompson, or even to the non-emergency number if they see anything happening, if they're not comfortable saying anything. We don't want anybody to do something and put themselves in danger, but we don't like to put lights in our parks unless it's a safety lighting situation, because as you know, there are birds that frequent that park, and having nighttime lights would impact their enjoyment of the park as well. So we really just have to be cautious, but it is a problem that is in existence across the board. So we're looking at a global approach versus just this one park approach. I hope that helps.
Oh, it did. And what about our gorgeous butterfly?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. So our butterfly, it appears that kids were on the butterfly where her wings actually pushed. So it's likely that it was kids outside of the age group in which it's intended for. And so a piece underneath kind of pushed through that part that bent. So we've actually been in contact with the vendor. I spoke when I was at the conference with the vice president of the company and told her our frustration with this happening so soon after use. And they are going to be sending somebody out to repair that, and then also figure out how we can prevent that from happening. The butterfly is a unique piece of equipment for Goleta. It was actually designed just for Goleta. They mm-hmm. don't sell this other places. So while, yes, she has a boo-boo, we're going to get it fixed. We also are the winners of a brand new, never been used before design. So we may see some hiccups as we move through this process, but the vendor has been very responsive. So we'll be getting that boo-boo fixed.
Thank you so much. I don't see any other hands. There we go, Commissioner Holdren.
I'm not sure if I was asleep or not, but where does one go to get the information about participating in the community garden?
You would, thank you, Commissioner Holdren, come to myself and Leonel, and it would be on our website. The community garden is not built yet. We have not gone out to bid to build that. So once it's built, before it is completed, when we have a good timeline on completion, we'll be doing a lot of outreach to make sure people know where to go and who to talk to about getting involved in the community garden. That will rest on my shoulders as well as Leonel's. And we'll make sure that people have the word and they know where to go. The commission did come up with the rules and the regulations and the process. So we'll be implementing that as it gets closer to opening. We want to get it into construction so that we can start that process. But we are ahead of the game with, we anticipated being able to go to construction sooner, but we had some hiccups. So here we are.
No, I know it's not there. Like I said, I don't know if I was participating when the rules, when the commission acted on the rules. That's all. I just was wondering if that's something you're saying that's something you could provide.
Yes, Commissioner Holdren, and I can send you tomorrow a copy of those so that you have it. I believe it was at your first meeting, if my memory serves. So that may be why it was a lot of information at your first meeting. So I apologize for that. But we can get a copy in your hands so you have that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, not seeing any other hands. What I'm going to do now is, before we move to B2, I'm going to stop, and we're going to ask Ms. Ramirez, are there any people who would like to speak in regards to B1, please?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to this presentation, please use the raise hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Okay, thank you so much. So now we're moving to B2, which is our wildfire risk reduction at Elwood Mesa. And we are going to have, could everyone make sure that you are muted? I hear some static. I don't know, does everybody else hear that? So we're gonna try to, oh, I see head shaking. So maybe we'll all mute ourselves. So I'm sorry, George, I interrupted your introduction. So we're gonna have George Thompson, our Parks and Open Space Manager, give a presentation on our wildfire risk reduction at Elwood Mesa. And I just would like to say that we, all of the commissioners, received a lovely email today from a community member appreciating what you're about to present, George. So thank you.
I think you're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Valdez. Thank you, Chair and Commissioners. So this item this evening is going to be a presentation about a specific portion of the work efforts that we have ongoing at the Elwood Mesa. And our focus tonight is on wildfire risk. I think everybody at the meeting this evening and listening from home realizes that we are in a prolonged drought, that we've had several wildfire events nearby, including at Hollister Ranch most recently, and the Alisal fire. When we look at Elwood Mesa, the thing that jumps out to a lot of people that go there is just the amount of dead down trees, overgrown shrubs, and combustible fuels. And so from the city's perspective, we have the responsibility as the owners and managers of that area to protect the community. If we could go to the second slide, please. Okay, this is an aerial view of the Elwood Mesa, and there's a couple things I'd like to point out here. The boundary of Elwood Mesa is shown in orange. The Monarch Butterfly Habitat Management Plan area, which is a management plan that was adopted by City Council in 2019, That outline is shown in yellow, and it's really focused on the eucalyptus groves that really are the dominant feature in the landscape at Elwood Mesa. They were planted in the 1870s by Elwood Cooper. Now they serve as one of the most important sites for overwintering monarch butterflies that migrate from other portions of the western U.S., come here for the winter months. And with that, it is just an incredibly valuable habitat. It also serves as an incredibly important draw for members of our community that go visit them during the winter, as well as folks that are coming from all over the world to come look at this phenomenon. One of the things that we're trying to do with this project that I'm discussing tonight is protect the community. So protect the community by reducing the risk of a catastrophic wildfire that could spread into the eucalyptus grove and then spread into the residential neighborhood. One of the important things for us as the managers of the grove and really focused on a large-scale effort to restore butterfly habitat is we know front and center, our objective is to protect the community from a devastating wildfire. Secondly, one of the biggest threats to the butterflies locally is wildfire. And so the work that we're going to be discussing tonight is also geared at protecting monarch butterfly habitat, as well as other wildlife that uses the grove. So I'll go through a pretty detailed explanation of how we, our consultant team and city staff, are putting together this plan and some of the tools that we are relying on to make sure that the work that we're proposing, which is large scale to reduce fuel risk, doesn't result in unnecessary damage to habitats. How do we balance those two objectives? Okay, before we go to the next slide, I just would like to point out a couple other things on this slide. And actually, if I could just say, I think Commissioner Jenkins, your phone is not on mute. So we are getting a little bit of feedback from your phone.
Okay, technically, I don't know how to put it on mute.
Okay, we'll just work through this. Okay, so the other aspect of this graphic that I'd like to point out is all of the areas that are shaded in gray. And if you can read the legend there, they refer to fuel reduction treatment areas. These are the areas that we're proposing to move into with our contracted crews, our own city workforce, partnerships with other state agencies, Cal Fire, County Fire, the California Conservation Corps. So these areas that are highlighted in gray are the first phase of work that we're proposing to do. And the reason that they're prioritized is they are the closest areas to residences, so habitable structures. Most of the areas that you see there in gray are within 100 feet of a habitable structure. And so when we're talking about a structure, we're talking about someone's home. From their roof line, we pull a measuring device out and measure 100 feet from their home. And so the city's not proposing to do work in their backyard. So if you can envision that 100 feet from their roof line, typically the first 30 feet or so is private property. We're certainly going to be rolling out public messaging, education resources that are provided by Cal Fire on how private homeowners can fireproof their home, tend to their landscape to reduce the risk of fire spreading into their property. But what the city is focused on is public land. So of that 100 feet, we're really looking at the 30 to 100 foot distance where we move on to private property out of their backyards and move into the grove. The other areas that we have highlighted here that are shown up by Hollister Avenue directly across from Elwood Elementary are Zone A, B, and C. And subsequently, later this month, we will be developing additional zones that address the other portions of the monarch butterfly grove, the eucalyptus trees there. But for starters here, we've delineated Zone A, B, and C for a couple reasons. One is in Zone C, we have the public parking lot, with public parking lots, we have an increased risk of ignition sources. So imagine somebody smoking in their car, flicking their cigarette butt out the window, it catching the grass on fire, and it's a windy day, similar to today, elevated temperatures, that wildfire could potentially spread into the grove and then subsequently into the neighborhood. So we're addressing that area in particular. And then Zone B, we've been doing a lot of work, both on the permit front, but also in the design arena on Zone B. It's known as Elwood North. That's the farthest along that we've got in our permit process with the Coastal Commission. So we wanted to include that area because we have a lot of data on it. We know that there are an incredible number of dead down trees there, and we have a developed restoration plan to come back in and plant. So I'll be talking a little bit more later in the presentation about the other larger restoration efforts here. So for tonight, we're really just talking about our fuel reduction strategies. Okay, so before we go to the next slide, I just want to put all of the commission's mindset into, if you were in charge of this project, how would you deal with the 90 plus acres of eucalyptus grove, the wider context of 230 acres of public land at Elwood Mesa? It's a landscape that is large enough that we need to break it down into bite-sized chunks to understand, one, what are the sensitive resources that we need to protect? Two, what are the actual conditions on the ground that we need to address in terms of elevated fuel levels? And then three, how do we actually tell a contractor or our own staff, go out there and do X, Y, and Z? So I'll be walking the commission through our process and how we dealt with those various issues and how we break up this large project into some bite-sized pieces. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so the first thing we did was create 23 different zones plus the alphabetical zones that we just discussed up by the parking lot. So the numerical zones, zone 1 through 23, reflect zones next to houses. So these are really the urban interface as you go from the urban residential developed area into the open space. So that 100 foot buffer, we chose to do a numerical zonation. And I'll be walking through in a pretty excruciating level of detail. And hopefully at the end of the presentation, you have a firm understanding of why we're doing what we're doing and how we're gonna do it. So for each of the zones, you can see there's a color coding system that we have, but let's just start with, how do we come up with zone one? What are the boundaries on it? There's a lot of different things that went into it. One is the habitat type. Is it grassland? Is it eucalyptus forest? Is it oak woodland, coastal sage scrub? Is it non-native exotic annual grasses? So that was one definer, is, you know, can we group similar habitat types together? That only works up to a certain extent, because then we start thinking about other considerations. Is it primarily native vegetation? Is it non-native vegetation? Is there a wetland nearby, such as a riparian area or a seep where we have year-round water availability, and thus it becomes a really important area for wildlife? And we definitely don't want to go into those areas and completely denude them in the name of public safety. We have to find a better balance for those specific areas. So we went through and created these zones based on a matrix of all those considerations. You can see that just coming up with, let's say, for example, zone 16 there down at the kind of center of the graphic there, where it goes from red to kind of that periwinkle color. That's an odd shape. And so we didn't just come up with zone 16. So I'd like to actually peel back another layer and describe how we actually came up with these zones. And the reason I'm doing this is it's critically important that everybody understands, as we unroll this major effort that will be multi-year forever, this is an effort that we have to do annually to get on top of the fuel vegetation loads. Before we jump into the next level of detail, I do want to point out our key here, our legend that says fuel reduction CWPP treatment. So the fuel reduction is talking about what are we removing in the landscape? The fuel is live plants, dead plants that constitute everything from grasses all the way up to large trees. So we're being selective about what we're reducing in the fuel load. The CWPP is our Community Wildfire Prevention Plan, which is another document that guides our work here. So Community Wildfire Prevention, Protection. We're basically, that plan outlines actions that we take as a city to reduce the risk of wildfire. It was approved by City Council in 2012, and so that's our guiding document. Within that document, we have various prescriptions, and I call them prescriptions because it actually defines what we as a city are supposed to do in removing vegetation for various vegetation types. So in a moment, I'll go into a more detailed explanation of what the modified aggregation, modified standard, unmodified aggregation, and modified standard criteria mean, those different categories. But for now, just know that the aggregation sites refer to our overwintering butterfly aggregation sites, where our butterflies cluster during the winter. We call that out as a special category because the butterflies are so reliant on vegetation, whether it's a 120-foot tall eucalyptus tree, a type of vegetation that they actually cling to for support, or maybe not as obvious, a lot of the vegetation that is upwind of that eucalyptus tree that provides wind buffering. So when we have a big winter storm, the vegetation that's there needs to protect the butterfly aggregation site so it doesn't become incredibly stormy, windy, and then disperse the butterflies, and then they don't have the energy and protection to survive the winter months from when we get winter storms. So just in your mind, consider that there's aggregation sites that we're paying special attention to, and then there's standard treatments that we're performing where we've determined through various tools that I'll talk about that when we do vegetation modifications there, we know that there's not going to be a direct impact on our butterfly aggregation sites. So that's our big split down the middle, is it butterfly habitat or is it not? And then overlying all of this, we have to always remember that there are other species that we need to consider that use the grove, such as migratory birds, resident year-round birds. We are in the middle of nesting bird season. So how do we deal with those other constraints? Okay, next slide. So before we actually go to the next slide, just picture in your mind and try to take a mental snapshot of those various zones. Know that we've got, you know, 23 different zones plus zones A, B, C. So how do we arrive at those zones? Next slide, please. So we have an incredible team working with us, comprised of several consultant groups that City Council contracted with last June. So since June, we've been working on various aspects of the plan, both for the fire issues, but longer term, a lot of the big restoration efforts that we're going to be implementing over the next 3 years at the Grove. So for the fuel issues, we created this map. And this is the first map that we created before we created the map that you had just saw on the last slide with the various zones. So with our team, we actually went out using various types of technology, but in particular GIS for short. It's a mapping program where we can do an overlay on an aerial photo to create 100-foot squares. And so that's what you're seeing here. If you start up at the very northwest up by Hollister at the entrance of the Bluffs neighborhood, 1A. So we literally just started up at 1A, drew a 100-foot square, and then worked our way around 2.7 miles of backyard interface. So from 1A down to 12L, that's 2.7 miles of area land interface that we are treating for reducing wildfire risk. So in each of these squares, we then looked at what type of vegetation is it? Is it native, non-native, trees, grasses, shrubs? and mapped all of that, and then subsequently grouped all of those squares into like kinds. So you can see the one series there, right down the left side, the western side of the screen here. You can see all of the ones, 1A through I, I believe. So that ultimately became a zone, zone one, for example. And then we worked our way around and created like squares, grouped those into zones, created additional zones where we had special sensitive resources such as a wetland seep or an oak grove or some other special resource that needed protection. Okay, and then the other feature here that I just want to point out are some of the other triangles and circles. So in particular, the triangles and circles denote where we have butterflies overwintering, whether it's a historic site or more recently, like this past winter, we actually counted butterflies every 2 weeks. And when we go out and count butterflies, we're actually counting individual butterflies on branches. And through that data set, we're able to show through time, through the winter months, where butterflies are using the grove for protection, for aggregation. And then we can actually use that to overlay onto our map to ensure that we're not proposing work that is going to directly impact those critical use areas for our monarch butterflies. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so going back to our actual treatments. So this is an exhibit from our CWPP, the Community Wildfire Prevention / Protection Plan. So without going through every row in this table, think of this table as the prescription. So when you go to see a health professional, they write you a prescription, say, do this. The CWPP provides us a prescription with enough detail where we can understand what the intent was, what the best practices are in the fire prevention world, and then also relate that to our site, but give us enough flexibility because we're talking about on this round, 25 acres, in the wider context of the grove, 90 acres. So we need a little bit of flexibility within this prescription to allow me as the Parks and Open Space Manager, our counterpart at County Fire, our wildland fire specialist, and then important for the butterflies, our butterfly biologist, Dr. Dan Mead, to put our heads together and address specific situations where it's not well spelled out and we can't apply this exact prescription. So we have some flexibility in there to write and modify the prescription. But what I want to point out here is let's focus on the right column. So this is fuel reduction zone B. You can see it addresses the area from 30 feet to 100 feet. So remember 0 to 30, private property, somebody's backyard, 30 to 100, generally public property under the management of the Parks and Open Space Division that I oversee. So under fuel reduction zone B, you can see that there's various treatments listed there. You have to go over to the left side there to see the fuel type from the top to bottom. Basically, it's going from grasses, forbs, which forbs are wildflowers that look beautiful, but then when the rain stops, they dry up, as do the grasses and become very flammable material. As you move down the green column, you get increasingly larger vegetation. So you go from grasses all the way down to trees, overstories. So that's big eucalyptus overstory with brush understory. So there's, you know, various plants living under there that create an additional fuel issue. So in terms of our specific treatments, you know, we're talking about mowing grasses, reducing dead down flammable material to less than 3-inch depth. Methods include raking, hand piling, removal, masticating, that means just grinding up with a machine, chipping, dispersal on site. So whatever we're chipping, we're reusing on site. We're just reducing the volume of it and putting it down onto the ground and using it basically as mulch. We'll talk a little bit more about what mulch is going to be used for, but in general, trail surface, reduce dust, and then also mulching trees that we're planting and other plants to reduce water loss. So we're reusing a lot of that material on site. Where we get into the aggregation sites, and that's what this table is for, you look up at the very top, prescription guidance for butterfly aggregation areas adjacent to structures. So this is where we need to pay particular attention to our overwintering monarch butterfly sites and ensure that we're not trimming or thinning trees that provide protection to monarch butterflies. So you can see that underlined there for emphasis. And so this is the aggregation treatment. And if you recall in the previous slide, we had two slides ago, we had modified aggregation or standard aggregation. The standard aggregation is just what you see here on this slide, where we're following the prescription. The modified aggregation prescription is where we need to do one step more and ensure that we really are not impacting the aggregation site. And what that means in English is we're not going to be removing as much vegetation at those sites because it's close to the aggregation site or it's in a particular area of the grove that already has a very thin canopy. And if we reduce the canopy anymore, we know that there are going to be impacts. Take yourself out of the aggregation site, and then we've got our standard modification areas, where our standard treatment areas. And even within those, if we're not next to an aggregation site, we still have a differentiation between what the CWPP, the Community Wildfire Prevention Plan, details for non-aggregation sites. We tweak that. So we've got the standard, plus we've got a modified standard. And so that was the legend in the first map that you saw, where we actually have a very structured process, standardized treatments, and then we've mapped those on units of land that are, the basic unit is 100 foot square, but then group them accordingly into like treatment areas. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, this is where we open up some of our behind the scenes tools. So I'll be somewhat brief, but I wanted to include these because they are both visually stunning and they are cutting edge. So what you're seeing here is a graphic that represents one of the tools that we're using, a tool called LiDAR. We basically fly a drone with a laser on it that shoots a laser beam down at the earth. And when that laser beam bounces back, it gets captured by the drone. And the speed at which that laser reflects off the ground creates this map. So you're seeing the tops of trees here, the dark red. If that laser beam hits the top of the tree and comes back to the drone, it's going to do that quicker than the laser beam that was shot down and hits the ground and then has to go all the way back up to the drone. So that's the difference that you're seeing here. And it creates this map, basically a topographic map of the entire canopy. Just to give everybody some sense of, you know, this tool and what we're going to be using it for, this visual tells us a whole lot of information about the grove that we can't see from the ground level. So one, canopy. Where have we lost a lot of canopy coverage? You can see right there in the middle where it's mostly blue, that's where we've actually experienced a whole lot of die-off over the last 15 years. And then you can see it visually here very clearly. The other things we can do with this tool is run subsequent models to show what wind is going to do in the grove. So we can actually pinpoint areas where we have a big exposure to wind and can then design our planting plan to plug those holes and fill that gap to protect the butterfly aggregation site. For the purposes of what we're talking about this evening, wildfire prevention, we can use this tool to pinpoint areas of the grove that have a lot of dead down trees that provide an elevated level of fire risk. We can look at live vegetation and see where that vegetation is in the grove, what height it is. So I'd like to just move to the next slide. Okay, so these are also LiDAR returns that we're using with our consultant team. So let's focus on the image on the left. This is exactly what I was talking about. So the black and white image there is the end of Santa Barbara Shores Drive. And so you can see those zones there depicted right up against the backs of the yards. It looks like 14A, B, 15A, B. And so when we look at each of those individual treatment areas, so the 100-foot treatment area, we can use our LiDAR technology to actually see how much vegetation is in that zone and at what height. And so one of these graphs that you can look at on the vertical axis where it says height in meters, just picture the ground level being at the bottom of that graph. And then as you go up on the left side, you're increasing in height. So you're going up to, you know, probably 200 feet on this scale. So as we look at the graph on the x-axis or the bottom of the graph there, we're looking at the percentage of vegetation in that height between 0 and 1 feet, 0 and 2. This is in metrics, so it's in meters, but I think you can quickly see visually where our vegetation distribution is. In 15A, that one on the lower left, almost all of the vegetation is below 10 meters, you know, 30 feet and under. And of that 30 feet and under, the vast majority of it is in the 0 to 1 meter. So we know that there's a lot of ground level vegetation, and we need to plan in our work effort this summer to address that area because it has a lot of flammable material down at the bottom, closer to the ground. Similarly, you can look at other transects that we've depicted here where much of the vegetation is higher up the canopy, not as critical of a risk for preventing wildfires. You know, we want to target those areas where it's ground level vegetation up to 6 feet, beyond 6 feet, you're not likely to have fire ignite, you know, off the ground. Okay, so the other graphic here, and I'll wrap up the presentation shortly, is an image, again, from our most important technological tool for this project, LiDAR. This is looking at the main butterfly aggregation site, so our crown jewel, where everybody knows to go to look for butterflies. So this is the main grove. Again, we can identify wind vulnerabilities there, that green box. After running some wind models, we see that there's canopy opening that's really depicted by that white oval there, that circle. That's where we've had a huge amount of die-off. So when we talk about wildfire prevention and looking at ways to reduce the risk of wildfire in and around the main grove, we want to be extremely careful about not removing too much vegetation along that southwestern portion of the area that you see here. So we've already identified through the models that we know that we can't go in there and remove, you know, a high amount of vegetation there. This is also a glimpse into some of the other components of the project that are not strictly about wildfire, but looking longer term at restoration of the grove. And I'll be back in June to the commission with a deeper dive and a wider view of all of the restoration efforts. But here you can see in some of the text that we've included, we are looking at planting shelter belts or these windbreaks of eucalyptus, different species, red ironbark. And then even when we get further away from the grove, like up at the top of the image here, where you're getting closer to homes, we've identified some wind vulnerabilities there, particularly where we have these hot days. It always seems like at the end of December, early January, we get that hot spell. We get these warm offshore breezes. It's just probably the nicest place to be in California, those beach days. But we know that we get some offshore winds that could produce some impacts on the butterfly aggregation sites. So even though we're on the opposite side of the ocean here, we still need to pay attention to those wind vulnerabilities and potential impacts that we would have on the butterfly site by removing too much vegetation. Okay, next slide. I think this is wrapping it up. Okay, so in terms of where we are right now, we're going to be submitting two permit applications, one this week to the Coastal Commission that defines all of the project areas that you saw this evening, defines our methodology, defines our timelines. We are asking the Coastal Commission to grant a permit waiver. So this is different from a coastal development permit because we are considering this to be maintenance work. It's ongoing maintenance, and we are asking the Coastal Commission to grant permission to conduct this work in perpetuity. So forever, we're dealing with a living landscape that's always producing vegetation. We certainly have a lot of deferred maintenance out there, you know, over 100 years of vegetation that's grown and hasn't been trimmed back or maintained. So there's going to be a big effort. Then as the years go by, where we keep chipping away at the vegetation and making sure that the community is safe, we'll get to a point where it just becomes an annual or every other year we need to do an effort out there. Okay, we are proposing several larger community outreach events. You can imagine if you live backing up to the Grove, you want to know exactly what's happening behind your house. So some of the graphics that we've developed that you've seen tonight allows that communication to happen on a detailed level where somebody can look at our map, talk to me at one of these outreach events and understand specifically what's happening behind their home. And then we're also interfacing with various community interest groups that have a vested interest, a stakeholder interest in either the butterflies or migratory birds. So in particular, the Audubon Society and Friends of the Elwood Monarch Group. And then various community groups as well, various neighbors in the Bluffs neighborhood and their HOA, as well as neighbors in the Santa Barbara Shores neighborhood. We will be doing two specific events. Let me just pull up my calendar. On next Thursday, the 14th, I will be out at the end of Santa Barbara Shores Drive with a table, informational table. In the evening hours, so trying to capture those folks that like to do the evening walk out at Elwood, just an informal opportunity for people to come by, ask questions, understand what we're proposing. And then also on that Saturday, the 16th in the morning, I'll be out there. Okay, I've mentioned wildlife several times in the context of monarch butterflies, but also right now we are in bird nesting season, bird breeding season that goes roughly from February to end of August, early September. It's unfortunate that we cannot perform this work after nesting season. And that's unfortunate for a number of reasons, but we basically cannot put this off until after bird nesting season because of the scale of the project at hand. So we're talking about 25 acres at this first run of fuel management work. We're not going to complete that all this year, but we're going to start it in May. If we were to work outside of the bird nesting season, we would have about 2 weeks, September 1st roughly to September 15th, to conduct work before the arrival of the first monarch butterflies. So that's our only time frame when we would be able to avoid both seasons. And so to make sure that we're not impacting bird resources, we have wildlife surveys that have been conducted and are being conducted. And then during the actual work, we will have on-site monitors while the work is being performed, basically as an advance front to go out and determine if there are nesting birds. If there are, then we create a protective buffer, minimum 300 feet. For some species, it could be up to 500 feet. And then we just have to work around those until the eggs hatch, the nestlings fledge, and then we can move in and do the work that needs to happen to protect the community. So how are we paying for all of this? We do have grant coverage from our $3.9 million Coastal Conservancy grant. Absolutely thankful that we have that funding. $3.9 million is a considerable amount of money. But as you'll see when I return in June, we have a tremendous amount of work to deal with the butterfly habitat, to remove dead trees, to plant new trees, to do trail improvements, signage, all of those other things that need to happen for the benefit of the open space and the butterflies. We also submitted a $1.7 million grant application to CAL FIRE that is specifically for vegetation management. And that, if we get the grant, we'll learn more this summer, that money would be restricted to use at Elwood Mesa on the issues that we've been discussing this evening. So vegetation management, dead tree removals. I think that there's going to be a lot of competition for the grant funding, but we're in a good position. So more news to come when we hear more about that. And then I mentioned it several times, but in June, I will be back to the commission seeking input on the comprehensive habitat restoration plan that we've been working on, and look forward to that discussion. So with that, conclude my presentation. Thank you.
Well, I have to, I get confused after I, okay, there you are. I want to thank you and congratulate you for an outstanding presentation. It's really one of the first kind I've ever listened to for the city of Goleta. And as someone who loves the butterfly area deeply, I was very wonderful to see your plan to protect that area. So I really thank you and congratulate you for all of your work. So at this time, I want to see, do any commissioners have any questions for Mr. Thompson? Wow, this would be a first for our group. Oh, there we go. Commissioner Walton.
Thank you. I was looking for the raise hand and I thought, well, I'll just raise my hand. So I enjoy the presentation, such level of detail, very helpful. Just a point of curiosity, you are going to install more eucalyptus trees as a barrier. So is this a species of eucalyptus that is not as, does not have the volatile oils, or why did you choose eucalyptus? And I know there's a scientific reason, I trust your judgment. I was just curious because I've heard that eucalyptus are so volatile.
Chair West and Commissioner Walton and Vice Chair and Commissioners, that is an excellent question and one that we have been addressing recently through a couple of avenues. So when we consider what the monarch butterflies are really seeking and why they come here to overwinter. So remember, they're coming from inland areas, fleeing the cold weather in the inland areas, Great Basin region. They come out to the coast to seek protection and warmer weather. And so they need to find these areas that have the perfect combination of temperature, light, and protection from wind and nearby water source. Plus, it'd be great if we had a lot of nectar so they can fuel up and be on their way in the spring. So when we think about the actual structure that they're looking for, large eucalyptus trees are really the only structure in our landscape that provides really the cathedral-like structure, the large openings in the canopy, dense groves around the edges that protect it from wind. We often field questions, well, why don't you plant things like sycamores? Our native California sycamore, our coast live oak, these are really the two primary trees that get to a stature that even attempts to compete with the size of our non-native eucalyptus. Unfortunately, our California sycamore loses most of its leaves in the winter months. And so it's basically a bare tree that doesn't have the leaf density to provide wind protection. And then for coast live oaks, they just don't get big enough to provide the same type of structure that eucalyptus provide. And so people often ask, well, what did the butterflies use before eucalyptus were here? One, it's not exactly clear which species they use. We know that they were here, perhaps not in as great numbers as we saw them in the last 30 years. They're obviously declining for other reasons. But they would use species further north, like Monterey pine, Monterey cypress. We're outside of their natural range here. So it may have been a case where the monarch population historically was found in greater numbers further north from us. Now, when we talk about eucalyptus in the context of fuel risk and fire risk, and Commissioner Walton, you're correct in pointing out that eucalyptus are known as being high in oils. And so what we're doing now is looking at, okay, the species that dominates the landscape at Elwood is the Tasmanian blue gum, Eucalyptus globulus, planted by Elwood Cooper as a get-rich-quick scheme. Eucalyptus, this particular species is from Tasmania, island state off the south coast of Australia, that gets way more rain than we do here. I mean, it's a temperate rainforest in a lot of the state, particularly in the southwest region, where Eucalyptus globulus, the Tasmanian blue gum, is native to. So what we've seen over this prolonged drought, is a significant die-off of Tasmanian blue gums, because they're just not getting the water that they need to survive and persist. And so our team is now looking at what other species of eucalyptus, there's over 400 species of eucalyptus. A lot of them can be found in California. So what other species can we find that are of significant height and stature, that grow quickly, that are resistant to pests, that are easy to transplant, will be very resilient in this landscape. And we've got a couple different species that we've identified. So we're not proposing to plant blue gum eucalyptus as our main replacement tree. So those are the trees that are in the middle of the grove that are supporting the butterflies. And then we have a different category of eucalyptus and coast live oak and other native trees that we can plant along the edges of the grove to provide the wind protection. We're using coast live oak because it provides a lot of other benefits, but we do have another species of eucalyptus cideroxylon, which is ironbark eucalyptus. We have a portion of the grove in the southwest area that is primarily ironbark eucalyptus, very little die-off, even though we're still in the thick of the drought. So that's a great example where we know it does well on site. It hosts an aggregation site. So we're going to be propagating those and planting those out as well for wind protection, in addition to our native trees and large shrubs that can provide that same benefit.
Thank you so much. So are there any other questions? I don't see any. So we're going to ask Ms. Ramirez, are there any questions from the public?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to this presentation, please use the raised hand icon. And we do have a hand raised from Carolyn Grenier. Carolyn, okay. I am unmuting you on our end. If you can please unmute yourself from your device.
There we go. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, and I have 3 minutes.
You do.
Thank you. Good evening, members of the Parks and Recreation Commission. I'm Carolyn Grenier, and I've had the privilege of living at the Bluffs in Goleta since 2012. For those of you not familiar with the area, the Bluffs is on the western side of Goleta. We're nestled within the Elwood Preserve, and we're right next to the Sandpiper Golf Club. On George's map, you all saw this evening, it's at the far left, zones 1 through 6. I'm speaking this evening because as a resident of the Bluffs, I'm extremely concerned about the lack of fire safety for our community. Since I've lived here, I've been actively involved in meeting with members of the City of Goleta and the SBC Fire Department to ensure that our community was as risk-free of fires as possible. Our last rock around for this purpose was on July 2020. And at that time, members of our community met with Jason Sweet, Captain Vegetation Management for SBC Fire, and George Thompson. We specifically met to evaluate the risk of fire to the Bluffs community. Following that meeting, Jason discussed his findings regarding the defensible space around the bluffs with the SBC Fire County Fire Department. And at their meeting, a recommendation was made to have the SBC fire crews immediately complete a 30-foot vegetation thinning and reduction project on the City of Goleta land surrounding the community. He further articulated that the vegetation surrounding the property had changed since the community was established in 2005, and that their perception of fire behavior in relation to wildland-urban interface was also very different. The request was made to the City of Goleta to gain the appropriate approvals through the Coastal Commission for this work to begin. And I want to remind everybody, this was in July of 2020. Since then, I've communicated repeatedly with George Thompson on the topic, and he has kept me abreast of the multitude of studies, maps, impact evaluations, and meetings that he has had to do over the past 20 months to get to the stage where he is this evening. With the 2022 fire season upon us, we are obviously still very concerned about the situation around our community and the fact that no clearing of vegetation has been done. For these reasons, I'm requesting that the Parks and Recreation Commission support the work of George and his team and help him in expediting the attainment of the appropriate approvals for this work from the Coastal Commission. I'm hoping that the recommendations of SBC Fire and the understanding of the risk of not having an appropriate defensible 30-foot space around our community will carry a lot of weight. I'm happy to walk through the surrounding property with any commission members wishing to do so to help highlight the concerns of so many of our homeowners. The safety of our community's 62 homes and the residents within them depend on our receiving the required permits from the Coastal Commission as quickly as possible. I want to personally thank George and his team of experts for all of their hard work in getting us to an understanding of what we are facing around us and an amazing tactical plan for ultimately accomplishing the goal of keeping our community safe in the long run. Thank you for your time.
Well, we thank you very much for your lovely talk to us. We want to assure you that the commission is very dedicated to supporting the work of Mr. Thompson. We are, you know, we all live in Goleta, and we hear your concerns, and we again fully support the work and the timeliness of getting this done for the City of Goleta. And we want to thank you very much. I do want you to know, ma'am, that we will not be making a vote or taking a motion on this. This is just a presentation by Mr. Thompson at this time. And you certainly got the dates. I would imagine that Mr. Thompson said that he will be available to talk to the community on those two dates he expressed to all of us. And unless there's anything else, Mr. Thompson, you would like to add, we can move on.
That's it, thank you.
Okay. Well, again, we thank you very much for talking to us, and we wish you a good evening. And now, once again, because there's no vote required on this, we are going to move to our discussion action item.
Chair West, excuse me, before you move on, can you please check with Ms. Ramirez to see if there is anybody else on the line?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I heard her say there was just one person. Please excuse me.
There was. Let me just ask one more time. If there are any other members of the public wishing to speak to the presentation, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no other hands raised.
Yes, thank you. That's what I thought. So, okay, with that said, we are going to move to C. And after I introduce this, I do want you to know this is an action item, so we will need to have a motion on this. So C is the discussion action item. C1 is the request for tenant improvements at Goleta Community Center field fence line. And we're going to have Mrs. Plummer lead this discussion for us.
Thank you, Chair West and members of the commission. I am excited to talk about a new project, a proposed project. This is a a little more lighthearted than the last topic. So, and I'll go quickly because I know you have the report in front of you, but if I leave anything out and you have any questions, please don't hesitate. So as you know, the Goleta Valley Community Center organization currently operates and manages the Goleta Community Center. And as part of that management or that lease program, they also manage the rental of the field behind the community center, which is behind the soon to be renovated pickleball courts and next to the Boys and Girls Club. So that field is heavily used by the Boys and Girls Club as well. And as you recall, back in 2019, the city of Goleta renovated that field. We kind of took it back from the Gophers, put in a beautiful athletic field, as well as a walkable area for individuals to walk safely, as in addition to a fitness station so people can work out there for free at no charge. And then in addition, we had a former chain link fence that divided our property from the property next door, which is the school district's bus yard. In an effort to make the new renovations pop and look really nice, and we worked with the school district, and together we built a fence, an 8-foot fence that sits along the side of the field. So that fence was installed a few years ago. It's due for some maintenance, and a few earlier this year I got a call from the community center and the Boys and Girls Club, and they would like to propose a project as a tenant improvement at that center, with the community center taking the lead. The proposal includes the community center staff, along with some of the older children at the Boys and Girls Club, painting the fence one neutral color, like a white or a tan, so that it's all one color. Right now, it's all still natural. That would provide the necessary maintenance on the fence, but also create some opportunities. The Boys and Girls Club would then work with some children in their program to develop 4 to 5 scenes that would represent community, family, health, and or Goleta in their eyes. These scenes would be approximately 4 feet by 5 feet and would be transferred to the fence by a local artist who would then have the images framed on the fence to depict the image of a hanging picture. So we would actually use just like floor molding, base molding to frame these images. And that would be on the fence. So it'd give the illusion of some hanging pictures. And the Boys and Girls Club, depending on how in-depth some of those designs are, we may be able to solicit the help of some of the older students. But if not, it will be all portrayed by a local artist who works with the Goleta Community Center currently, and they will be paying for that cost. In the future, if resources to restore the images the time of new maintenance comes along, the framing would come down and the fence would be painted all one color. I'm pretty confident to say that we would find the resources to restore those images. Nobody wants to paint over children's art, but we definitely would not want to commit the city to an obligation today for future years down the line. Should the commission choose not to support this recommendation, it's likely that the city of Goleta would need to provide the necessary maintenance to include labor and materials. So right now, as the fiscal impacts of the project, the community center will provide the labor and necessary equipment needed to paint the fence, as well as utilizing some of the older kids to help paint the fence. We'd put a primer coat on it as well as a paint coat. And then the community center organization would also provide the artist compensation. The Boys and Girls Club will provide the renderings and some of the older children to assist with the initial painting of the fence. And the city of Goleta has been asked to provide the materials only, which would be the paint and the molding frames. The paint would be funded by the Public Works maintenance budget, and the molding would come from the Neighborhood Services special project budget. So with that, that's all I have, unless you have some questions. The next steps after this is this will be a recommendation that we're going to take to City Council. And if City Council approves it, we're hoping to be able to get this project done in June of this year. So again, fresh, brand new fence that gets the maintenance that it needs and then gets a little uptick utilizing the innovations of the children at the Boys and Girls Club to bring their thoughts to life on the fence. So that's all I have, unless I'm available if you have any questions.
That sounds fabulous. What a wonderful idea and a collaborative project. Do we have, we are going to need a motion on this. Do we have any discussion or any questions about it at this time? Yes, Commissioner Walton.
Thank you, Mrs. Plummer. That sounds wonderful. I just have a few questions about the artist. Can you tell us more about the artist that is behind the project, and you know, possibly what sort of themes they might come up with?
Commissioner Walton, thank you. That's a great question, and I am embarrassed to tell you that I don't know much about the artist. The Community Center organization has worked with this artist. She has done repairs to the mural that's along the fence. They just had some of the paint chipping away, and she came in and did repairs. She's working with them on another project as well that they'll be proposing later on this year for a future mural at the community center. I have not yet had the chance to talk to her. I'm anxious to do so, but she is a local resident, and she is donating a large portion of her time. So her compensation is minimal because of her the opportunity that she's giving back to the community. So she is getting a mild compensation, but in the art world, it's almost an embarrassment of the compensation level that she's getting, which helps our budget. And so we truly appreciate her passion for the community and her support of such a fun collaborative project.
I understand. So is it indeed the same artist who has painted the other mural that's on the other side of like the community center? It's against the wall.
Commissioner Walton, no, it's not the same artist that originally painted that mural, but it is the artist that the community center used to when they had to restore some of those components. Okay. So some of the materials that were initially used had bubbled and peeled off. Yeah. And so they had to scrape those back and reinstall and treat that surface again. And so this artist was able to do that, and she did a fabulous job. You can't even tell the difference. It was a seamless repair.
My only other point is, and this is a minor point, but I think it matters. When my children were small, they participated at that Boys and Girls Club, and it was a wonderful community. The staff there, some of the volunteers, the older teens really loved it. And what was really important and really blessed me in a lot of families was that the staff were representative of the children who go to the Boys and Girls Club. So my only point would be, is this a local like indigenous artist, or is it a Latin American or African American? Just someone who's actually able to you know, relate to maybe do some cultural type artwork. It would be wonderful if maybe we could recreate some Chumash scenes. I'm not sure what that would entail, but just making sure that it's reflective of the children who are participating there.
Commissioner Walton, I hear what you're saying. The project that's proposed before you is actually artwork that the kids would come up with, and the staff would be work. The staff at the Boys and Girls Club would work with the kids to develop what they depict those topics to be that we mentioned, which was community, family, health, and or Goleta. So what they're choosing to represent, we'll be putting a panel together to select the different images that would go up. So if something like the Chumash heritage may be something someone learned in school and they feel that that strongly should represent community, that might be something that a child would depict. And it's their staff that will be working with the children. And then once the images are chosen, that will be put on the fence. Again, depending on the detail, we'll determine if the children will be able to help out. And at that point is when we'd be engaging the artist to help transfer those thoughts as depicted to the fence material. So that's the project that's before us. But I can definitely share those comments with Mr. Savat, who is the club leader at the club right now, and he'll be the one working with the kids.
So just a final question then. So is the artist a local Black, Indigenous, or person of color who's leading this effort?
Again, Commissioner Walton, I don't have those answers. I know that it's a female and that she is local, and she has been very generous with her talents. That's all I know about her, and that she's very good. because we've been able to see her work with the repairs that she's made, but I don't know anything more about her. I have her name and an email, and that's all I have. So I have not yet met her.
The only reason I bring this up is because there's a lot of talent here that they're underrepresented in our local art galleries. That's one of the reasons why the organization Healing Justice Santa Barbara had that longtime exhibit downtown in Santa Barbara. It was there for maybe like a half of a year, and it featured local artists that normally would not get any attention. And so I do hope that the artist that is going to be working with the children is someone who is diverse and representative of the children who participate there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Williams, I did see your hand. Okay.
Chair West, I think my comment is somewhat related to what Commissioner Walton said. And I do understand that the children will be coming up with the designs, which is wonderful. But when the dust settles and we know what we have, I certainly hope that the panels will reflect the tremendous diversity of our community. So I really think that's very, very important for the entire community that these fabulous sounding panels do reflect our rich diversity in Goleta.
You know, the only comment I have is I agree with you both. However, what I do hear Mrs. Plummer telling us is this is actually coming from the vision of the children, how they see themselves. And the artwork is based upon what they would like. And, you know, if they want purple people eaters on the fence and they're happy about that, then I would like to honor what the kids would like. And I view this as a wonderful project of the Boys and Girls Club, and we're just basically supporting it. Am I wrong on that?
Chair West, this is coming to us as a tenant improvement because normally they would call us and say, hey, this fence needs to be repaired or painted, and we would go out and George would use his resources for the time and materials. And so they're, instead of asking the city for all the time and materials, they're actually, and the equipment to do the work, they're asking for the opportunity to do this project on the fence. So we are, as the property owners, seeking approval from the commission, in which we'll then go seek approval from council because it's considered a tenant improvement.
Thank you. So at this time, I'd like to ask I'll come back to you. So we're going to ask Ms. Ramirez, is there any public comment?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak to this item, please use the raised hand icon. And there are no hands raised.
Okay, great. So now we'll go back to you, Commissioner Walton.
Thank you. I just want to be clear because I think I was not clear and I misled you, Commissioner West, or Chair West. I'm not concerned about what the children choose to create, but it does make a difference on who was working with the children on what they feel comfortable in sharing and what comes out. And sure. Historically, Latino, Black, Indigenous artists in Santa Barbara are not commissioned for these activities. Their talent is not available. And you keep mentioning the fact that the artist is donating this. So it makes me wonder, is this similar to what happened with the pickleball and that a group of wealthy neighbors were able to put money together and then decide because they already raised the money that they could do the pickleball? Is it, you know, because I understand we want to save money for the city and not waste resources because it's so important to be a good steward of our resources. But I also want to make sure that we are employing all of our community, all of our neighbors, and not just the wealthy ones. And especially because the children that participated at that Boys and Girls Club, they're such a lovely, diverse group. It would be wonderful knowing that we have Black, Indigenous, and people of color artists in the community. It would be wonderful to have one of those work with the children. And what a wonderful example for them. So that's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Commissioner Walton.
Okay, do we have any motions out there at all? Anyone interested in making a motion for us? This is an action item, so we do need a motion. We need it second. to do this for the city of Goleta, so that Mrs. Plummer can have an okay to go forth and tell it. Any motion? Ah, yay! Commissioner Revel Pureton.
I move that we, I make the motion that we endorse the proposal as presented.
Excellent, thank you. Do I have a second?
A second.
Oh, thank you. I think that's Mr. Commissioner Jenkins.
You're correct.
Excellent. We're happy you did that for us. All right. So now we please need a roll call vote.
Commissioner Holdren.
Trying to turn it on. Aye.
Commissioner Jenkins.
Aye.
Commissioner Replegold Purinton.
Aye.
Commissioner Walton.
Unfortunately, I can't say aye unless we know more about the artist, so I'll abstain from this vote and let you decide.
Vice Chair Williams?
Yes.
And Chair West?
Yes.
And motion passes.
Thank you so much. That's great. So now we're at D, where we have commissioner comments, and this is a chance for any of you all to make a comment, but know that staff cannot respond because it's not on the agenda. Does anyone have any comments? Vice Chair Williams.
Thank you so much. First of all, I once again want to thank staff for your excellent presentations and your excellent work. I think you once again inspired us and the community with all of your thoughtfulness and the progress we're making on so many fronts. I did want to just mention this to the fellow commissioners and the public. Ms. Plummer and I spoke a little bit about this beforehand. And when I reviewed the minutes of our meeting when we discussed the staff's recommendations with respect to the, you know, modifications to the budget, I was first of all reminded that I was disappointed at that meeting that there was not an action item. We as a commission have tried for several years to have a voice in the budget process, and without a motion opportunity, we really could express our views, but as reflected in the minutes, they were not reflected because there was not a motion that we were able to make and present to the City Council with any recommended modifications we had to what staff was proposing for amendments to the existing budget for the upcoming year. So I would just hope that when staff comes back to us in approximately a year or a little less to talk about the next 2-year budget cycle, that we will have a discussion in the context of a motion where we can either recommend what staff is presenting or we can recommend it with amendments that reflect the commission's input then to the City Council. So I just wanted to make that very clear. I did not point that out when we were doing the minutes themselves with respect to that meeting, because I know if there's not a motion on the table, it is the City of Goleta's policy not to reflect the discussion. And so, you know, the City Council doesn't know what we discussed. And that was the whole, you know, one of the main purposes was not only for us to know what staff was recommending, but to give feedback to the City Council, which is our responsibility under our ordinance that creates us. So I just wanted to make that point. Finally, I do want to thank Commissioner Jenkins for his work on Stowe Grove and our chair and all the commissioners for the excellent work that everyone is doing. It is an honor to be part of this group. And I do think together we are making a difference, a positive difference for our community as we celebrate our 20th anniversary.
Well, that's a lovely note to end on. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to share? Well, my exciting news is just reminding everyone our next meeting is Wednesday, June 1st. With my news is that I really think we're going to be in person. So stay tuned. You know, many of us, you know, have never been in the same room with each other in real life. And that will be very exciting for all of us. So again, stay tuned for that. I'd like to thank everybody for their time and wish you all a wonderful 2 months until we meet again. And so we're at D. We are officially adjourned. So thank you all very much. Bye.
Good night.
I never bother with people I hate. That's why the lady is a tramp. Dice games with barons and earls, won't go slumming with ermine and pearls, won't dish the dirt with the rest of the girls. That's why the lady is a tramp. I like the free, fresh wind in my hair, life without care. I'm broke. That's okay.